the different senses in which one may take the same word in the same language, a useful work from the intelligence of author, which may serve as an introduction to rhetoric and logic. Before speaking of figures of speech in particular, I should say a word on figure in general, for tropes are no more than a king of figure. One may agree that figure are the manner of speaking distantly of what is natural and ordinary, that there are certain turns and certain expressions that differ from the usual simple fashion of speaking. What there are figures? It is a word that takes itself in a figurative sense. That is a metaphor. Figure in the proper sense is the exterior form of the body. All bodies are extended, but outside this general property of the extended being. They each possess their particular figure and form, which make each body appear different to our eyes than another body. It is the same with figurative expression. In the first place, they may know what one thinks. They have a general property which is appropriate to all phrases and every assembly of words, and which consists in signifying something by virtue of grammatical structure. Moreover, each figurative expression is a particular modification that belongs to it alone, and it is by virtue of its particular modification that one makes a separate tips of each kind of figure. Indeed, I am persuaded that there are more figures of speech here in the marketplace or market days than during several days in any academy. Thus, far from figurative speech being at a distance from the ordinary language of every day, there are, on the contrary, ways of speaking without figures that are more removed. If it were possible to construct a discourse in which there were only non-figurative expression, there are still mannered ways of speaking, their figure displays of or draw from afar, which withdraw from a common and simple way of speech, in the same way as affect modes of dress and removed from the manner of costume that is used between honest people. Antithesis, for example, is distinguished from other manners of speech, for in the assembly of words that form antithesis, words are opposite one to the other. Thus, when one encounters examples of these kinds of words with opposing meanings, one is brought back to antithesis. The apostrophe is different from honor's enunciation because it is not in the apostrophe that one addresses at once a word to a person present or absent, etc. There is nothing more common than to address speech to those to whom one speaks and to reproach them when one is discontent with their conduct. There are ways of speaking, they are quite ordinary in language, in which it is evident that words must be supplemented to achieve the expression of a tone in which liveliness and passion may be heard. One calls this figure ellipse, that is to say omission. It is not only in the prosopopeia that the dead, the absent of inanimate beings speak, it is even in other figures. They have each their particular character, which distinguishes them from other collection of words, and which makes for saints in the ordinary language of ordinary people. Grammarians and rhetoricians have made their observation of different manner of speaking, have made particular classes of this different manner. so that they may put in order and arrangement their own reflection. Manner of speaking in which they are not being remarked any other property, that than of making know what one thinks, are called simply sentence, expression, and intermission. While to the expressed not only thoughts, but also thoughts enunciated in a particular way that gives them their own character. Thoughts, I will say, are called figure, because they appear, so to speak, in a special form and with a specific character that distinguishes one from the other, and above all from that which is no more than a phrase or an expression. As Monsieur de la Bruyère says, there are certain things in which mediocrity is intolerable: poetry, music, painting, and public speaking. There is no use of figure in what he says. That is to say, his whole sentence does nothing else but express what Monsieur de la Bruyère is thinking without having any special character. Otherwise, when we add what a torture it is to hear a cold discourse pompously declared, or hear a mediocre verse pronounced in too emphatic a manner. It is the same soul, yet it is expressed in a particular form of surprise or admiration that makes off in the figure. Imagine, for a moment, a multitude of soldiers, of which so have only the ordinary costume they wear before their engagement, and others who wear the uniform of their regiment. These are they who have a dress that distinguishes them, and make it known to which regiment they belong. Some wear red, others blue, yellow, etc. It is the same in the assembly of words that compose discord. An educated reader responds to a certain word, to such a phrase, to such a figure of speech, according to recognition of the form, the thing, the character of that figure. Sentences are words that do not bear the distinguishing mark of any particular figure, are like two soldiers who wear no regiment's uniform. They have no other modification than two that are necessary to make know what one is thinking. It is hardly astonishing that figures, when they are used appositely, give vivacity, force, and grace to discourse. But for other than suitability of the expression of twos, like all other correction of words, they have again, if I dare say so, the advantage of their appearance. I may to say of their particular alteration which serve to wake attention, to please, or to move. Otherwhere, although well-placed and select figure embellish discourse, and they are, so to speak, the language of imagination and of emotion. It should not be believed that discourse only drove its beauty from figures. We have many examples of all kinds of writing where beauty consists in to express therein without any figure. There may be no figure, and yet much that sublime makes readers in a single word. I could give any number of examples enunciated without a figure, and in which a true alone give value. Therefore, when one says that figure embellish discourse, it is merely to say that in the occasion where figures are hardly used. The foundation of truth may be expressed in a manner that it is more lovely or more noble or more agreeable by the assistance of figure than it would be if expressed without figure. From all that I have just said, one may form this definition of figure. Figures are the way of speaking distinctly of others by a specific modification. That means that one reduces each part to its particular, and this renders discourse more lively, more noble, more agreeable than the way of speaking that expresses the same foundation of truth without any other special or particular modification. My objective is that my readers will find the imitation of the example of which they have need, if not from themselves, therefore their pupil. It is up to the teacher to rule on the use of this reflection and example according to the degree of enlightenment, the talent, and the spirit of their followers. It is this conduct that removes the tones that give the taste for letters, from there the love of reading, from which is born to necessity of instruction. Instruction creates the good citizen, while the sordid interest born of misunderstanding can only create the opposite.